Hello, welcome to Poet Runner. My name is Rafael Alvarado. I have my co-host Richard Modiano. Today we'll be talking to Kim Dower about her new book, I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom, on Red Hand Press. Hello, Kim.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. I love the book. I love the theme, because there's no way I could possibly ever write poems about, you know, motherhood.
Well, I don't know. You know, don't sell yourself short, Raphael.
I don't know if I could put myself in that place. I mean, I can write about my mom, but...
Yeah, of course. No, I know. But, you know, a lot of the poems in this book are not autobiographical, but I am a woman. I do have a mother, and I do have a son, so at least we've got that going, you know. So, yeah, I'm glad that you enjoyed the poems. You know, it's a compilation of poems about being a mother, having a mother, but it's not always cheerful. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. That was one of the things. I was going to sort of review the book separately, but I'm going to just fold in my remarks to our interview. First off, a couple of things about the physical book itself. It's a beautifully produced book, a nice hardcover,
yes.
wonderful, no dust wrapper, but a really nice embossed illustration on the front. And, of course, it's equal to the contents, let's put it that way. Usually, you know, we see poetry books and they're kind of slapdash affairs, but this is a nicely made book, and it's worth every cent that you pay for it. And it will make a wonderful Mother's Day gift. And as Kim just said, what struck me about it when I read the book was the range of emotions that are there. When you see the physical book yourself, it looks deceptive in the sense that these are going to be about the joys of motherhood. But they're also about the sorrows of motherhood and the challenges of motherhood. And that's one of the things that I really liked about the book. It covers the whole spectrum of what it is, of what parenting is for a woman. And Kim's voice, as you will hear when she's going to be generously reading from the book, Kim's voice is a very flexible voice. And it's capable of sort of a warmth, and it's capable of sarcasm, and it is piercing and enticing at the same time. And you know, one of the things that I like about, well, to me, that makes a good poet is the range of approaches they can take to a particular subject. And Kim has a very broad range, as we're going to hear shortly. So that is another point about the book that I really liked. The other one is her use of language is it's not arcane. It is like everyday speech, but it's an improved everyday speech. I mean, that's what a poet does, is pick out is basically shape our language and make it sing. And I mean, in our ordinary discourse, we have all kinds of hums and haws and blah, blah, blahs. And a poet takes all that out and shows us sort of the heart of speech. And that's something that Kim does in this book, as I'm sure you will see when she starts reading a few of her poems. So it's a good book. It's available from the publisher. It's available from Amazon, though personally I recommend that you purchase directly from the publisher. It is Red Hen Press is a small, struggling press. It's been around for a while, and it is a very distinguished Los Angeles press.
Yes, it is.
That Kim has this fine book coming from Red Hen Press only makes it, you know, check out the rest of their catalog, but start with Kim's book first. So,
well, Richard, I mean, thank you for every single word. It's just beautiful to listen to that. And I appreciate it. I will say that the book is physically beautiful. They
yes,
just did an unbelievable job. I'm forever grateful that they made this book. And it's also available in all your independent bookstores, too. So, you know, if you're here in LA, it's everywhere, all the places that you love to shop. So
yeah, I'm so used to over the last 2 years, I'm so used to saying, to not going into bookstores. Thinking, well, if you want to buy the book, order it from the publisher. But yes, yeah. Now you can go back into your bookstore, at least here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, would you like me to dive into a couple of poems, Raphael?
Sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, please do. No, please do.
So, I mean, just as Richard was saying, I mean, here's a poem. It's very short. And it certainly takes a different road than the thrill of parenting and being a daughter. It's called She's Never Trusted Happiness.
Okay.
Maybe it was something her mother said one morning as the young girl dipped her donut into a glass of whole milk, powdered sugar still on her lips. Her mother tells her, don't get used to this.
I love that poem. I read that poem. That's one of the poems I really loved.
You know, honestly, I'm going to tell you, I don't know where that poem came from, which is fine. It's one of those gifts that comes to me, comes through me, and I wrote it. And we never ate sugar donuts or dipped them in whole milk. All right, that's all I can tell you. But there you go, and it's become a big favorite in this book.
No, it's a great poem. When you started writing this book, did you plan to write a full book about mothers and the theme?
No, not at all. And I will tell you that this is my fifth book from Red Hen Press. And throughout all of the books for the last 13 years, I've had a lot of books about being a mother, having a mother. And a few years ago, I thought, wow, what if I pulled all those poems out and I had a bunch of new ones and created a compilation called I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom, which is one of my poems that people used to like from one of the other books. And I thought maybe if I have them all in one place with a theme, with an arc, with a story, people could really get their head around it, and it could be a poetry book that could mean something to families, to daughters, even to sons and fathers, and that's what this book is. So some of the poems were written, 10, 15 years ago. Some of them were written 3 years ago and never published before, and so there's a very big mix in this book.
I like the book a lot because it makes me think about my relationship with my mother that I don't even really dwell on much, but it made me think about it a lot.
Oh, that's great. You know, I have a son, and there are a lot of poems in this book that are about him, and I wonder sometimes, you know, when he goes to a reading and I'll read one of them or two of them, you know, how he feels, if it makes him comfortable, uncomfortable, but honestly, we can't really worry about that. I mean, we can, but I don't say anything about him and the poems that would be upsetting, I don't think. But I wonder if it makes him think of what it was like when he was younger or what it was like for me to be his mother. I have one of those poems. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say it's that resonates with me as a son because although, you know, my mother wasn't a poet, she did like to show pictures of me when I was a kid, a little boy with curly hair. And I was only slightly chagrined by it, but not really discomfited in any way. And it was like, oh, Mom, please, I don't look like that anymore. I wasn't as cute as you say I was, and blah, blah, blah.
Right. You know, our parents, they love us, and they like to show us off, you know. And
yeah.
It's very sweet. When we're young, it's highly embarrassing. But, you know, when we get older, it's actually quite sweet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
how old is your son now?
Well, he's 32.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And married,
it's like,
you know.
That's what I mean. He's now he will like these poems, I think. This is what... It's like a time machine in a way, and especially to see yourself through somebody else's eyes, somebody that knows you intimately, like your mother, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. That's it must be interesting, to say the least. So I'll read you a poem. This poem, visually, it has no punctuation. It's sort of like, well, it is one long line with no capital letters, no punctuation. It's kind of a rant, and it is about my son when he was much younger, and it's called Huge Rat in Laundry Room. Written on a Post-it, stuck to the coffee maker. I read it first thing in the morning. My son wrote it the night he came home with his dirty clothes, dumped them in the laundry room. The rat, standing in the middle of the floor next to the washer, looked up at him, and when I saw the Post-it at 6 a.m., I wondered why he didn't scream when he saw the rat, and how did it get under the cabinets? You know, they can shrink down to the thickness of paper, their bones collapsing like years of memories. They can slink in or out of any hole, crawl space, sealed corner, squeeze themselves like toothpaste through a hair fracture in cement. I will imagine its nose bobbing around my laundry, sniffing panties in the dark, looking up at my son, who came home last night to dump his clothes, have a bite to eat, sleep in the bed where he became a man.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot.
So, you know, he was in college then, and that's a true story, that poem.
How'd your reading go last night at Skylight?
You know, it was wonderful. My goodness, it's the first time in, well, over 2 years that I've been inside a bookstore to reading. And it was such a beautiful time. I mean, it was a mix of people from different places. There were some relatives, some friends, some good friends, some students from different classes I've taught here that I'd never even met because they were Zoom classes. You know, Noel at Skylight introduced us,
mm-hmm.
and I read with Kate Gale, who is an amazing poet, and Eloise Klein-Healy, who is also fantastic. So we make a nice combination. We're very different, and it was crowded, and it was lively, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I wish you could have made it, but no.
When I lived in the valley, Eloise was my neighbor.
Oh, how nice. Well, you know, Eloise went through a terrible, horrendous situation with losing her language.
Yes.
She had a terrible, you know, just horrible brain infection, basically. It's,
yeah, from when she went to Costa Rica. Yeah, I remember
yes.
that.
And she lost her ability for language. She lost, she couldn't put words together. And it was a very long road to recovery with a wonderful therapist who helped her to get her words back. And she's now writing again, so it's quite miraculous.
Yeah, and it was so unfortunate. She had just been named Los Angeles' first poet laureate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember.
When she fell ill.
That's
ill,
right.
So.
Well, she was actually on the stage, allowed, excuse me. She was on the allowed stage doing an interview with Caroline Kennedy, downtown L.A., and she suddenly, she didn't know what was going on. I mean, she got through the evening, but the next morning, it had happened. So, I mean, very terrifying situation, and particularly, I mean, for anybody, but particularly for a poet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up towards close to the end. We've got about 4 minutes before I got to let the runner on. So is there anything you'd like to bring up in the last 4 minutes of the poet part of the show?
Well, did you want me to read Game Over?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to hear that.
All right, so this poem is called Game Over. I squirted too much mustard on my hot dog, and now I can't eat it, I tell my friend at the game. That's why God made napkins, he tells me. Wipe it off. I tell him I knew God made mustard, but I didn't know he also made napkins. I tell him once the mustard gets soaked up by the bun, it's game over. Even napkins won't help. He's disturbed. I can see in his face he's mad I wasted a perfectly decent hot dog, and worse, now I'm doubting God. When did you stop believing in him? He asks me, his face twisted like the pretzel I'm about to put mustard on. Did I ever believe in God? Was God peeking through the window up there in Laurel Canyon when my son was conceived? Was he in my belly when they sliced it open so they could lift my baby out of his warm, private ocean? Was God in my son's hands when he pitched a perfect game at the pan? My friend's still talking. I was an altar boy, he continues. You don't forget the Eucharist, wearing the crisp cassock, snuffing out candles as the priest consecrates bread and wine. You don't forget ringing the bells until someone you love dies. Then it's game over. He tells me these things, our shoulders touching, as Manny hits deep into left field. The men on base run their hearts out, thousands in the stands praying, please, God, please, get the run, win the game. As the mustard hardens on my cold dog, bun stiff, I slip it under my seat with God's blessing as the first man slides safely to home.
Oh. I love that poem. It's got so many things going on and so many great images.
Thank you. This is a fun poem to write. And I'll just tell you, if we have time, very briefly, to honor my great teacher and friend Thomas Lux, the great poet, we would exchange poems. I had sent him this poem a long time ago. He's passed away since. And the original poem was, I squirted too much ketchup on my hot dog, and now I can't eat it, because I put ketchup on. And he said to me, Kim, no one puts ketchup on a hot dog. You have to change it to mustard. And I was just appalled at the thought. And he said, no, you, this is a great poem. It's got to be mustard.
That's kind of funny. Because I actually put ketchup on mine for a while when I was younger.
I love ketchup on hot dogs. But, hey, you know, I did it for him. And now the poem wants to have mustard on it. So that's that.
There we go.
That's a great poem.
Well, thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
No, it's great having you on. And eventually I'm going to expand the show so I could have more time. Because I actually want to talk longer, but the thing is I got another guest, so I definitely want to expand the show so I could have more time to talk and more time to, you know, hear about poetry and stuff. And I love talking to you. I love having you on the show. I picked Richard because I knew he'd be great for this today.
Great. Well, you know, it's great talking to both of you, and thank you so much. So, you know, you don't like to keep the runner waiting because, you know, he might run away.
That is true.
So,
thanks a lot for being on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, no, it was our honor and our pleasure to have you on.
Okay, well, thank you. Have a great rest of your show, and I'm sure we'll bump into each other one of these days.
Yes, we will.
Kim Dower, have a nice rest of the day.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate that. You too. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Okie doke.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, Mafanwe?
Yes.
Hello.
Hey.
We have Mafanwe
Collins. Me?
Yes, I can hear you. And she just ran her first marathon, so we're probably going to talk a lot about that. I think Richard might have some questions. I'm not sure. He might, but he's not a runner. He might have been. I don't know. But
no, I'm a writer, too.
Well, there we go. We're going to bring that up, too. But how was your first marathon? I know you were in pain for a little bit.
I was. So it was... It was not what I expected, and I've done a lot of thinking about it because, as you know, I spend a lot of time in training, and I really nailed my training and did so well and had a vision in my head of how it was going to work. But in the way that life goes, it was much like grief. So I got in my head at the beginning of it and never quite got out of it. And this is what my coach didn't want for me to happen. And I'm 54 years old, so to be running my first marathon is kind of a rarity, I guess. You know, it's rare that a person
thing.
Runs a marathon, but at an older age, it's like even more rare. Yeah, it is a good thing. And I want to be encouraging to people about that as well. But it started okay. I was doing what he wanted me to do, like go out guns blazing. And then around, I guess, there is a switch back. It's like a go out and come back. Once we switched back, the wind had been at our backs and then it was at our face. And that kind of spooked me. And then once I got past the half marathon and was coming back, when I got to mile 15, my calves started to twitch and seize up a bit, and that got me. And then once I turned back at the turnaround and got to like mile like 15 or whatever, I was in so much pain and just standing by the side of the trail like swearing. And some lovely, complete stranger to me stopped and was like, "What do you need?" I was like, "My calves." And so she started massaging my calves for me. And then she's like, "I've got pickle juice and salt," and gave me that. I'm like, "No, you take it." She's like, "No, I'm only doing a half marathon. You're doing a full." She's like, "I want to wait with you." I'm like, no, go run your race. And I ended up like passing her later. But I was just, my legs were so far gone. Then my quads started seizing up. And so I just ended up running as fast as I could and then walking as fast as I could and then run like for probably the final 6 to 8 miles, that's what I was doing. And I already knew I had missed my cutoff for time. So I just knew that I had to get across the finish line because my son was there. And I know how much your son means to you too. So, you know, like no matter what pain you've got, you're going to finish that. And I didn't want to not finish.
I think when I did my first marathon, I was stuck. It's just about finishing at the first one. But if you have goals, it's great. But, I mean, my first one, I didn't have any goals. I just wanted to finish.
Well, yeah, I had goals. I have goals of qualifying for Boston. So it was like, I was on pace for that until, like, my legs, which had never cramped up during training, decided to do that. But that's the thing, right? It's, like, so different from your training because you're in the zone. And it's, like, almost not as important as the training. It's just like, but I did start thinking of it in terms of grief, like, you know, you're in denial at first, like, why am I, what's happening, what's going on? And then you start bargaining, like, okay, if I make it to the next tree, I'm good. If I make it to the next pylon, I'm good. And then you get depressed. You're like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I doing this? And then, you know, then you get to acceptance at some point and you're just like, I'm in, I'm doing it, not going to give up now, going to keep going. I've come through this whole huge wave. So I've been thinking of it a lot in terms of that. Because I was a little mournful about it last week too, but also proud of myself. So, yeah,
I'm
don't regret
you, you accomplished
anything.
It, you know.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, after you do a few of them and you start, like, numbering them and getting past, like, 8, 9, 10, it becomes easier, and then you don't mind the pain so much after a while.
Well, and it's like writing, too, because, like, I've written about that this week in terms of that, too. Like, I have, like, you know, I've got 3 published books, but I've got 9 unpublished manuscripts, you know, and I'm never going to stop writing. But there's no guarantee that you're ever going to get to the end with a published book. It's just like, and there's no guarantee that you're, go ahead.
No, actually, you mentioned writing. So I got Richard in here. Richard could ask you some questions about writing. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Richard.
Yeah.
There you go.
So what do you write?
I write primarily fiction. I have a novel, a young adult novel, and a collection of short stories and flash fiction. And I'm working on a narrative nonfiction book proposal about this training and not really just about it, though, about like being a woman, being a divorced woman, grief, trauma, you know, all kinds of things kind of tied up into this cycle that I'm going through.
Okay, yeah.
You want to read something small and maybe show us a little bit of your writing?
Sure. Let me see. Okay. I'll read this piece kind of, well, it kind of like ties in with running for me too a little bit. It's called Pray. Okay. There's not a great deal of light. She lives at the bottom of a hill in a valley of sorts. The sun goes down early. In the summer is behind the three big oak trees by 5 p.m. Without this light is a depression or an excuse to have cocktails earlier and earlier. By December, the glasses and ice were coming out at 3:59 p.m. in anticipation of 4 p.m. and darkness. She remembered smoking on a stairwell, watching as rain fell somewhere in the distance. Rain sliced down, but sliced gently. Glasgow in December, with the rain whispering down, the gray light, white cloud sky, the 3 seconds of sunlight each day. Not so different from where she was then, in this dark, wet place called home. Living in a bog, spongy earth, sodden. A bog is like a swamp, but not. From a lake comes a meadow, comes a forest. This is a natural progression. There's a natural progression to these things. In one part of the forest on their walk is a sort of meadow filled with saplings. Soon he tells her, this will be a forest. There's also a stream they pass over, dark, rocky, brooding. She's scared to walk there because it's near the dump and she fears the animals are nearby, searching for food, for prey. And she knows that if you get in the way of that, you're in trouble. In this bog, there are toads, moths, and spiders everywhere. The spiders invaded in May and stuck. Daddy Longlegs clung to the clapboards like starfish. The webs of lesser spiders in every windowsill. At first, she thought that each week she would need to whisk them out with her broom. But as summer progressed and the rain fell and fell, it became an everyday search. The spiders, the ants, the slugs were everywhere. And there were also the fireflies, flicking on here and there in the edge of the forest on hot June nights. And there were also the dragonflies, high and higher in the dusk light, looking for that last mosquito before the bats came out, and everyone hid. Everyone hid when the bats came out, afraid of claws tangled in hair, afraid of rabies dripping down, afraid of their mousy, doggy faces that could be sweet, but were ugly, but were mute, their pointy ears, frisking, twitching. Once there was a girl who poked a bat on the sidewalk with a stick. It was daylight, the creature desperate and dying on the hot ground. She poked it once, twice, and its pink mouth opened, revealing white piranha teeth. She flicked the thing onto the grass with her stick. On its back, it pushed with its elbows until it managed to turn over, but still could not fly. It edged across the grass to the shadows. The bat is more scared of you than you are of it, the mother said. The bat is a helpful creature. It eats insects. Remove it safely. Do not kill it. But she wanted it dead, wanted it gone, those teeth. The furry ears, not benevolent. The blind eyes, the chalky squeak. The sound of the hawk when he is hunting is almost a squeak, but more like a squeal or a scream. The sound of the owl at night, one long and too short, one long and too short, almost like a huffing sound. The huffing sound of a bear. Didn't know she'd actually heard it before with her sister in the woods once they pushed back a branch near the pump house and heard a huff, huff, then ran downhill through the branches back home. Of course, you should not run, they say. this makes the predatory instinct kick in. You are fleeing. You are prey. The light drops through in chunks now, through the heavy pine trees and onto the spongy ground. It could cut cubes out of the forest floor and make a sod house, could live in their backyard in their very own sod house, and could burn the sod in their very own sod house fireplace. They would likely be safe there. End.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, Richard, what did you think? I want your thoughts,
yeah,
Richard.
I like that. Yeah, I like
what
you
like.
Thank you.
Well, you know, the good writing brings in all of the details and situates us in the physicality of what the author is saying, and that's what draws a reader in. And you've got that working for you.
Thank you.
Yep. I agree. So, when's your next marathon?
It's in September 11th.
Well, I was just kidding.
It's my
last. I didn't know you had one planned. I was just doing this to mess with you.
No, I have one planned. I'm doing a half marathon in 4 weeks. I've got some 5Ks lined up. It's called like a last chance to qualify for Boston Marathon. It's in Hingham, Mass., which is in the South Shore. And it's a 6-loop around a park. So it's going to be super boring, but flat and, you know, I'll get it done. I'm going to bring it home.
No. You know, as long as you run and you enjoy the run, that's all that matters. I mean, Surf
City.
That's
what I got to do.
I had the best time in a marathon I hated, and it was just because it was boring. It was just back and forth, and I thought I had a horrible run, but it turns out it's been my best time in years. And I'm like, oh, man, on the bad marathon, I have the good run.
Wasn't that when you had your sore leg, too?
My what?
Didn't you have a sore leg during that one?
No, that was the great race. That was only a half marathon.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's the injuries. It's the, like, all this stuff that we struggle through. But it is, don't you feel like it's so, I mean, I know you write as you run. So it's like it is,
yep.
The compulsion is so similar for me.
Yep.
And I think for you too. And there are, I know a lot of writers who are runners or triathletes or whatever. It's like very much in both endurance sports or arts. It's like an endurance art.
What do you take for nutrition? Because every runner has something different. I have my thing, and
yeah.
The last person I talked to had his thing. I mean, what do you,
yeah.
Do you take proteins? Do you pre-workout
so
or anything?
So for how I start out my day is like I have coffee with collagen and chocolate muscle milk in it. And then I have water with a noon tablet. And then I have a half a bagel with egg whites for my carb and protein meal. And then after my run, I do oatmeal with peanut butter and like raisins or something in it or some other fruit. Just to build back up. And for on the run, this is where I think I'm messing up my fuel. So I just ordered, and I don't know if you've tried these or not, those, I don't even know how to say them, Martin cat or gels, you know, M-A-U-R-T-E-N. I've never done gels, and I wanted to do stuff all natural, but I think that's part of how I messed up on this marathon was like my fueling wasn't spot on. So even though I had done everything that I'd done previously, I just think I need more.
Did the gels mess you up or something?
I've never tried them. I just ordered them.
Oh,
I'm going to start trying them.
Yeah, I can't
them,
do gels.
You know what I think about them.
I haven't found a gel that hasn't made my stomach kind of funny. So I've been using electrolyte tablets.
I use electrolyte tablets too, but these are the ones that Kipchoge uses and swears by. So, and I've had another friend tell me that, like, he hates gels, but he tried one because he got one for free and he loved it because they're like pretty natural, but like a good. So I'll let you know what I think about them. They're hard to find. Like, they're not they're, well, you can probably find them more easily in LA, but I would have to go to Boston to get them if I had to order them.
What was your after marathon meal? Me, it's always pancakes.
I was a little sad. I was in a lot of pain because my legs had locked up. So I had some like dumplings that were in my freezer. It was like I didn't have a good plan for after. I wasn't in a good headspace. I just kind of got home and got to bed, which is really sad. I'm going to plan it differently next time. Pancakes sounds like a really good, like, fun celebration, you know? Like,
I was like in battle.
I wasn't, like, thinking in a celebratory way, and I should have been, and that's part of the problem, I think. Like, I got in my head.
No, you know,
but
it's your first one.
Fun.
You're entitled to have the reaction you had, you know.
Yeah, and as my coach said to me, he's like, you're cerebral. You gotta, like, the day before, he was like giving me the pep talk. He's like, I really want you to get out of your head and just, like, let it flow. Like, I want you to feel the flow. And I never felt the flow. Like, today I felt the flow. Today I had a great run. I felt excited to run. My body felt good.
Question. Yeah. I just thought of something because I just run to run. I don't worry about time when I'm just running to keep maintenance. Do you run for pace when you run? Do you run to see how fast you're running? Do you? Because I just run. Then when I do the marathon, I do the best I can.
So, well, I was doing it that way. Like, I was just doing whatever I thought. But then, like, as I told you, I hired this coach last fall because I wanted to see what I was capable of, and I wanted to not injure myself because I felt like I was pushing up against an edge of injuring myself. And so his plan for me is kind of the 80-20 plan, like 80%, you know, run for volume and at a slow pace to build up anaerobic or whatever, and then 20% speed. So he does give me a lot of speed work, and I hate it. But I've learned so much about what my body's capable of because each week when we're in, like, the threshold, the three-week threshold training, put a friggin' workout on there that I'm like, I can't run 16 miles at tempo. Not happening. But, like, he's like, 16 miles at 7:30 pace. I'm like, that's not happening. And then I do it. And then I do it because I follow orders. And my final run with him – or my final run of my training, my long run was like 18 miles at 7:45 pace with warm up and cool down. So I ended up doing 20 miles total. And I was like, I can't do that. That's too much. And I did it, you know, and it was my most favorite run I've ever done. And it was on my treadmill. And it was, he said, make it an event. And there's so much psychology involved in this. And so, like, in my mind, it was the marathon. That was my marathon. And everything else didn't matter after that, honestly. Like, that was my race. And as
cool.
You know, we're not racing against other people.
No.
We're just
racing
running.
Against ourselves.
We're out there running. Yeah.
I race against myself.
Know.
I try to beat my times. I stopped. I used to, when I ran, used to worry about people passing me as I run, thinking that for some reason I got in my head and I started chasing them, and I stopped doing that recently. I just run now.
Right.
I relax.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're all out there just doing our thing. And then you meet, you know, like me, some stranger stops. Oh, so here's the end of that story. So some stranger stops and rubs your calves and gives you her pickles. And then at the end, when you're like walking across, getting ready to walk across the finish line, she comes up behind me and hugs me and says, I'm so proud of you that you finished. And
yeah.
There's the beauty in the running thing is that camaraderie.
Yep.
And that,
no, the community. It's a very sweet community.
Yeah, I know you've like had that same kind of thing, right? Where you meet somebody and like it's special.
Well,
the
few runners I've interviewed have been really sweet, you know, they've been great to talk to.
And we're just all in it together, right? And we all kind of come to it for a similar reason. It's like grief, anxiety. Whatever, something mentally that you're pushing through, that this running gives you
it's good therapy when you're going through stuff. You could just zone out as you run and feel the things you need to feel. I mean, I don't feel any anger when I run.
Yeah. Right. It like helps you release that, right? And it
yep.
The endorphins are like, there's nothing else like them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But,
actually,
yeah, I know.
All right. Well, it's almost time to say goodbye. We got another minute. Is there anything you want to say, promote, push, any books you want to promote that you've done?
No, I'm good. I'm happy to promote you and what you're doing. Like, I love this, and I'm so proud of you.
No, I appreciate the help so far. I appreciate the help a lot.
Yeah. You're awesome, and thanks for having me.
No, it was great. I mean, I'm happy I met you.
Me
too.
Thanks
for the
And we wouldn't have met without running, right?
Yep, nope. The running brought us together.
Yep.
So
happy to have
you
as a
friend. Thank you for being on the show, Mifanwe Collins, and actually next week I'm going to have next Saturday I'm having a runner that was actually in the Boston Marathon, so I'm pretty sure you're going to listen to that
one. I know,
one.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to, for sure.
All right, well, let me pitch some things,
all
and
right,
I'm
well,
going to Richard do a review.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Nice to meet
Thanks
you, Richard.
Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Same here.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, the thing I'm going to talk about today is something I'm still using. I'm still bringing up Psychotic. It's a great pre-workout. For some people, it might make them too jittery. It might make their heart pump too much. For me, it's great. It gets me going. It actually keeps me going until I finish running. Then I use Insane Labs, same company. I use the Surgeon, which is a post-workout, which actually helps me recover from the run. I mean, it's basically for lifting, but I use it for the running right now. And now Rich is going to talk about two books.
Just one book. One book today. So the book I'm going to be talking about today is a collection of poetry by Iris DeAnda called Roots of Redemption. And it's a stunning piece of work. Her voice is pitch perfect, and the writing is strong throughout. The book's published by Flower Song Press. It's nicely produced. It has a wonderful cover illustration. And it has its origin in Iris's own hideous encounter with law enforcement. The collection is divided into two parts. Part one is called Police Brutality, and the second part is called Immigration. Now, the police brutality part of the book, several of the poems are dedicated to the victims of police violence. And I'd like to read this one to start out with. Some say, for Trayvon Martin, somewhere a mother weeps blood over daughters and sons. Under the night sky, stars reflect the fallen ones. Somehow a man blindly walks over history repeating, under cover of self-defense, hearts break, no justice beating. Sometimes a human seeks one truth over generations of pain. Under the gray clouds, echoes drifting, the tainted rain. Someone, a boy, flies free over unjust juries. Under the flag, candles burn, the people's fury. And that is called Some Say for Trayvon Martin. On the whole, this book, Roots of Redemption, elaborates a true definition of solidarity, both in words and in deeds. So, this is not just a collection of a lament, but it also has a sense of purpose, dedication, and resistance, and a will to confront the difficult without remorse or without, there's no sense of victimization in this. Even though it is about people who have suffered at the hands of unjust authority. And in these poems, and in the second half, the immigration part, Iris offers snapshots of pain, sufferings, and challenges, but most importantly, she articulates a powerful lesson. Life is most fully lived when lived for others, and that is what her book is about. It is her her empathy with other people, and that kind of empathy that she brings into this poem makes the book stand out for me. So I'd like to read another one from the first section called Say Her Name for Sandra Bland. My sisters have strewn their bodies across the pavement, breath taken under moonlight. Lament the way her skin blends into the night. You will forget her, the way she moved across daylight, a queen shining from the inside. Say her name. Repeat her memory until it becomes the echo of her daughter, of her laughter. Ignite the candles to remember our fallen daughters. Pursed lips and clenched fists hold on to her. Keep her safe in the ever after. For those will come who question her character, the reasons why it was and is okay to silence her. Say her name. Black women's lives matter. This American night is too dark to swallow. It is the collecting of history and those who quit listening to the master. Sing her songs of freedom. She was humming the chants since birth. Now we must shout until we are heard. Say her name. Sandra Bland, Maya Hall, Tanisha Anderson, Rikia Boyd, Miriam Carey, Michelle Cousseau, Shelley Frey, Kayla Moore, Alexa Christian, Megan Hockaday, Breonna Taylor. Say her name, say her name, say her name. And that is Say Her Name for Sandra Bland. So it's, this book is basically Iris DeAnna's poetic responses to law enforcement's impact on people of color and who suffer, you know, this is, you know, the empirical evidence, all of this statistics show that people of color are the primary victims of police violence. There is no question about that. And we know what the basis of that is. It's racism. We live in a racialized society, and this book confronts that head on. So I'd like to read one of the poems from the immigration section. And by the way, the immigration part of the book is bilingual. And some of the poems skillfully transition between Spanish and English. And I'll start out with the short one, just called Untitled. I dream in English, but when I dream, I pray in Spanish. This must be the language of my corazón, of my heart. And we can see that in the poems in the second half of this book. So let me find, I lost my place here. Papa, this is for my father and his father and the fathers before them for their courage to continue the family line, even through hard times. Sitting in this chair, there are sounds like orchestra music, deep breaths and life seeking alternatives. There are screens holding images of universes, lines and numbers creating balances. There are feelings in the air of high hopes and despair. I choose the first with hands in prayer. I offer up these words like smoke signals to the Creator. Bless the hands of all who work here. Dedicate their lives to caring for others, day shifts, night shifts, all adrift. Today is questionable. What brought you here? Loss of time, loss of memory, delusion, lies in the eyes of medicine. May the results be positive. Believe in miracles. We are survivors. Ancestors visit, fill the waiting room. There is no hesitation. Just beings in bloom. That new heath finds its way to your body. Find new life, breathing light amidst the ordinary second chances, few and far between. So give thanks today for the living. So that poem is called Papa. And that's just a sample of all of the fine poems that you will find in this book. So this is a story of the stories told in this book are stories that have been with us in the past or with us now and, alas, will be with us in the future. But if you take to heart what Iris DeAnna has written in this in Roots of Redemption, and it's significant that the title Roots of Redemption points the way forward to a time when we can get beyond this police oppression, get beyond a racialized society. It's something that we all have to struggle for. So Iris's poetry is concise and moving, and really, this is truly a book for every reader. So I strongly recommend it. Roots of Redemption by Iris DeAnda, available from Flower Song Press. Order from the publisher first. If you can't find it in a local bookstore, order it from the publisher, and then only down on the list, order it from Amazon. So thanks for listening.
Also, we have Iris DeAnda is going to be reading for us at our Intelligent Beast reading at Avenue 50.
That's
May
right, yeah.
15th. Avenue 50 is located. Oh, crap. I don't have the address handy. If you have any questions about the address, please ask. But
well,
Avenue 50.
It's on the web. You can find it. Avenue 50 on the web. It's in Highland Park. And like the name of the place says, it's on 50th Avenue in Highland Park.
Yep.
So.
And the readings at 2 p.m. We're going to have Doug Knott, Pam Ward, Iris DeAnda, and Olga Garcia at 2 p.m. Also, me and Richard worked on an anthology, which you can tell you a little bit about really quickly. The COVID.
The COVID artists and poets respond to the pandemic, and it was co-edited with myself, Rafael, and Consuelo Flores, our third editor, who did a lot of work on the book. So that book is available now. You can order it directly from Finishing Line Press. And we had a terrific group of poets in that book.
Yeah, we did. So, also, eventually, we're going to be doing a review called The Intelligent Beast, which is also the name of our reading series that we're doing with Finishing Line Press. And we're just keeping busy, and I'm really happy I had Richard today to co-host with me, and I've enjoyed doing the show with him as much as I've enjoyed the years of friendship with Richard.
Yeah.
And that's it for this episode of Poet Runner. This Saturday, I don't know who the poet I'm having, but I'm having Jason Terrain, who just ran the Boston Marathon on Saturday. I'm going to book a poet probably today, and I'll put it on and tell you when it's coming up, and thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot, folks.